I think we should be live now. Can you hear me okay, Mariana?
I'm here. Can you still hear me?
Yes, and here's a wee bumper for everybody out there.
Good spell. With John and Mariana, good spell. They're top and all that is everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Inter. Lecture conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
This is the DS106 Good Spell, futzing splendidly since 2013 on a DS106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets from blog post 106, posted by the DS106 Shrink at 1:06 a.m. on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS106. Mantras and Koans, if you like, that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Good evening, John. How are you this evening?
Pretty well, actually, yeah. I found how to play one iTunes track at a time, so that's my kind of learning for today done.
And I'm thinking everything has gone very smoothly and nobody has said so far, we can't hear you!
Yeah, but that's probably because nobody's listening. there's always that.
Don't tell anyone.
Anyway, we are back with another bullet point. And this week's bullet point is 152. And it says, do we have a big circle of invisible friends, as Borges says, or just invisible ones as online relationships? And in square brackets, after an open online course.
That was me trying to make it a little bit clearer from the perspective of today. What the hell did it mean?
Yeah, so what did it mean?
It was my kind of reflection around building relationships and the kinds of relationships that I had built and that were built in the context of after we did the Headless 13, which was my first experience with DS106. So it was this that kind of a reflection, really, of what is the quality or the kind of relationship that we have with a whole lot of people we haven't met. And about the same time, I guess the connection with the big circle of invisible friends is a lovely video, a short video that shows Borges talking about. The title of it is something like "What is the task of art as he sees it?" And that's it's in that he talks about the big circle of invisible friends.
So we have we listen to this. In Spanish.
Yes, Spanish. Well, I did think, I thought we could just read it in English, but actually his voice is so lovely and they put it to music and everything. I thought it's like listening to a song you don't understand if you just listen to it in that spirit. And to say to people, we will sort of translate it into English afterwards, and it's only a minute and a half long, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think sometimes listening to things you don't understand is a good idea. So... here we go.
Dejo, como un regalo personal.
La tarea del arte es esa. Es transformar, digamos, lo que nos ocurre continuamente, transformar todo eso en símbolos, transformarlo en música, transformarlo en algo que puede perdurar en la memoria de los hombres. Y es nuestro deber ese. Tenemos que cumplir con él. Si no, nos sentimos muy desdichados. ¿Sí? Pero en el caso del escritor, en el caso de todo artista, tiene el deber...
Put the mic next to it so I can hear a bit.
Este transmutar todo eso en símbolos. Esos símbolos pueden ser, me imagino, pueden ser colores, pueden ser formas, pueden ser sonidos. En el caso del poeta son sonidos y también son palabras y fábulas, relatos, poesías. Quiero decir que la tarea del poeta es continua. No se trata de trabajar de tal hora a tal hora. Uno continuamente uno está recibiendo algo del mundo externo. Y todo eso tiene que ser transmutado y ser eventualmente transmutado. Y en cualquier momento puede llegar esa revelación. Es decir, que el estipoeta no descansa. Está trabajando continuamente, cuando sueña también. Además, la vida del escritor es una vida solitaria. Uno cree estar solo y al cabo de los años, si los astros son propicios, uno descubre que uno está en el centro de una especie de un vasto círculo de amigos invisibles, de amigos que uno no conocerá nunca físicamente, pero que lo quieren a uno. Esa es una recompensa más que suficiente.
So, for our listeners out there who don't speak Spanish, do you speak Spanish, Mariana?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so that I speak English a bit, I think. unfortunately, and I really regret not being able to speak anything else, but that sounded nice. This is the translation you've sent me here, which I'll attempt to read out.
Okay.
The task of art is to transform what is The task of art is to transform what is continuously happening to us, to transform all these things into symbols, into music, into something which can last in Mam's memory. That is our duty. If we don't fulfil it, we feel unhappy. A writer or any artist has the sometimes joyful duty to transform all that into symbols. These symbols could be colours, forms, or sounds. For the poet, the symbols are sounds and also words, fables, stories, poetry. The work of a poet never ends. It has nothing to do with working hours. You are continuously receiving things from the external world. These must be transformed and eventually will be transformed. This revelation can appear any time. A poet never rests. He is always working, even when he dreams. Besides, the life of a writer is a lonely one. You think you are alone, and as the years go by, if the stars are on your side, you may discover that you are at the centre of a vast circle of invisible friends whom you will never get to know, but who love you. And that is an immense reward. So...
Isn't it wonderful?
It is, and I mean, he's talking about it as if it's just the thing that writers or artists do. And it's maybe a thing that actually everybody does, they're just maybe a wee bit better than us, artists and writers at doing this, or poets, because we continually tell ourselves stories, tell each other stories, we tell people what we're doing, we take selfies and stick them in Instagram, do all sorts of stuff, and do you think that's the same thing, because what we're doing is transforming experience into
how interesting. As I hear you talk now, I make the connection, of course, that if in a way you could say he is describing how we learn, that everything that happens in some way, you know, we kind of process it, and in fact in Spanish he uses, I think it exists in English, transmuting. Transmute. It's kind of different in a way. I feel stronger somehow, but that whole thing about somehow, you know, creating something new out of what's coming into your senses and so on. And I guess the link that you're making is actually, isn't that what we all do when we're making sense of the world and when we are learning something?
Yeah, I mean, and just, I guess we're almost always doing that. And sometimes you're doing it to learn, sometimes you're doing it as a, if you're retelling somebody, you're doing it to try and reshape that reality maybe. And I guess some sort of learnings like that, if I'm categorising something to understand it, if I was putting a, you know, different types of shrew into species or something like that, and trying to understand them, that's me telling a story about these shrews. You know, this one's got a different shading when it's fur or something like that, and this one needs to run about faster or whatever.
I guess the difference between the artist, and let's say generic to the artist, not just writers, because of course Borges was a writer, but actually he drew, he did a whole lot of things as well. It wasn't just writing. You know, the difference is possibly that it isn't done, that it isn't always done explicitly to create something new. That, you know, often we are learning, transforming and so on, but it's not necessarily that we want to output something consciously out there. Whereas one would say that if I was to call myself an artist, there would have to be art that I produce, wouldn't? I don't know. I'm thinking out loud.
I'm just wondering if it's some sort of spectrum, where you know, you produce something, and maybe there's a jump at some point where the people who we call writers and artists are better at it, and maybe when it's not so much create something new, they get a new view. And a different aspect or a different truth that's nobody's noticed before, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, a scientist will tell a new story about something when they find something out. You know, there's a new story about Pluto or something which furthers our understanding of the universe, say. And an artist or a writer may tell you, put a new spin on a character or a relationship or something which tells us something new.
But I guess the other, the sort of from there he's going on to say, actually you do what you do as an artist because you have to do it, and it's kind of you're just doing it because it is a kind of intrinsically, you're intrinsically motivated to do it. And then he says, after you've done it sometimes all your life, and this is the circle of invisible friends, you might find that have it, through your craft and through you doing what you're doing, there are all these people around you that you may never meet, but that kind of make up that this vast circle of invisible friends who love you. I think that is because I suppose that is what success for an artist would be.
Yeah, and maybe that's success for everybody. You know, like a great businessman is telling a story to sell lots of things, and you know, make everybody buy this particular brand of golf club. You know, trying to sell this new pasta sauce I've just made to my wife. Is it a continuum, or is there this real big difference?
Well, it's no difference. And actually, if you forget about the output and about the, you know, you forget about that, actually, ultimately, isn't it on the other side of that continuum that you're imagining, isn't it also that any human wants that? Whether they are, and actually possibly, you know, not invisible ones, but more tangible ones. But actually the kind of having your ideas accepted by people who maybe you will never meet is something that in a way a lot of people, you know, it's like being heard. It's the idea of being heard, isn't it?
And perhaps, I mean, we're talking from a point of view of digital storytelling, and perhaps that we're reaching a point where more people have more chances to tell their story. And that may mean that the quality drops a bit. If we're not all Borges. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Borges. Borges?
Borges. How you were pronouncing it was closest.
You know, that we're obviously not somebody of that amount of talent, and we maybe don't put as much effort into that as, you know, and more into other aspects of our lives, or maybe not born with that, but we're maybe. Maybe there isn't a quantitative difference between an artist and a person.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because of course he also wrote this the Library of Babel, didn't he? Babel, however one pronounces that. And I think the kind of essence of that is that when you have too much information, and information that is not organized in any way that anything can be produced. His thing is there is no information, because there is no way, you have no way of distinguishing good, bad, indifferent, and which is to your point of, you know, as we get flooded with things, because anybody can tell a story, what do we have? What's the quality of what we have, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, and we're presuming that in the same way that at some point, say, if we take this right back into the history and imagine a world where we didn't have writing or anything and people would be telling stories, some people would be better at it than others, and some people would get that title or job. But I'm sure everybody, you know, told a story. Everybody I know tells stories to their kids, for instance, but they don't claim that name storyteller, and it doesn't get wider than that.
Yeah, so then you go back to its dissemination, to use our present-day terminology, right? It's dissemination, and the number, how big your circle of invisible friends is, that determines then whether or not you are an artist.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's something controversial to talk about.
Well, it's also... it's like a writer who's trying to get published and doesn't get published in their own lifetime, and then is valued greatly afterwards. People are always
like all the people that said no to J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, well, this is again and again that happens. You know that some of our most famous poets died unknown and became famous afterwards. Other people who were, you know, really, really popular disappear. So I guess this dissemination is, you know, put out there, and then we try as best we can collectively to filter out what is interesting to different people. And maybe the internet will prove to be better at that, because... It does give the opportunity for categorising and long-tailing and organising and all the rest of it, and amplifying. And maybe if you amplify faster, you get to the good stuff quicker, I don't know.
And there is, I suppose, a way in which it becomes, so long as you are in the kind of the lucky part of the world that has access to it, then it means that you can put out your, you know, whatever it is that you want, your story, whatever it might be, put it out there, and I guess that people can find it and can help you disseminate it and spread the word, etc. And if enough people pick it up, I guess one could argue that makes, you know, that would make you, it's more like it would be easier maybe to become successful. I guess the question becomes whether that is what artists seek. I think some artists today do seek success for the sake of it, and they almost do not care about their craft so long as they are successful. I kind of think that that's the wrong way around, but maybe I'm just old fashioned.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things that I'm probably not qualified to talk about, which leads me on in the same way, you know, that I'm not an artist, I'm not a critic, but on the internet everybody can be one, both artist and critic. You mentioned, you know, that this is like a real first world problem, but I feel we're in this age where, you know, there may be some terrible things going on in the world, but in other ways we're living in a miraculous time where I've got access to all sorts of things, you know, information at my fingertips, and the possibilities of, if I've got a good story, of telling it. And maybe the other thing is audience. Because the people who get famous, say, as a writer in their own lifetime, their audience is probably people who are influential. And what I really loved when I discovered online communities and things, and this may be getting back to, is that I had access to groups of people with the same interests as myself, whereas in everyday I didn't. So I can be,
so you can find that,
yeah,
find your group of your affinity groups, as we call them now. So, and I guess, yes, it's possible. Well, that is what DS106 is in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can find people, and you were talking,
What did you read something?
No, just your original bullet, you know, was this circle of invisible friends. And that's what, you know, that's what online does. It gives you this ability to find your friends if you were interested in this particular thing. And nobody else in the town was pre-internet. That was you. You know, you were stuck. You maybe were going to the library and trying to get a book out on a field guide to shrews or something like that.
You're going to give yourself a name. I'm not going to say a bad name with the shrews example. I can imagine you sorting through shrews, you know, and is it a spotty one? Is it a grey one? Is it a green one?
I was talking about, I used to know, like, I could recognise there isn't that many species of shrew in Britain, but there's a couple of them that are quite tricky, and I used to be pretty good at it, but I'm not anymore. But you know what I mean? I mean, when I was young, say, I was interested in shrews and voles, and there wasn't anybody else in my town that was. And to get a good book on it, I had to go to the library.
Yes.
And nowadays, I can just open up a browser and type in voles, and I get all this information about voles and their teeth and all sorts of things. So that seems like a miracle to me, or just a wonder. In this age that we can get that sort of stuff.
So that's about, I guess that's about information and getting information, but you can also, you know, in the kind of way that we sometimes do on Flickr and that Alan sometimes tells the stories, you know, put something up and then go, but I have no idea what this is. And then whoever is, you know, an invisible friend pops up and says, actually, this is this. Or, you know, I don't have a recipe for this, and what do I do with this? I've seen Alan do this, you know, what was the last one? He'd grown something he didn't know what to do with. And he was going, you know, what do I do with this thing? And then he got the invisible friends popped up to give him recipes and things. Of course, he would argue that these are not invisible friends.
So that's probably what would be interesting, because in your notes for tonight's show, you've put a link to, a recent post by Alan on Alan Levine, Cogdog, on connecting to people, and that he feels he wants to drop the virtual from online friends.
Yeah.
That there isn't much difference. That's in one way true, in another way maybe not quite so true. I don't know.
And Rochelle, she just tweeted. She says, you know, when you talk about invisible friends, is that similar to virtual communication? So she's making the link, and then she's saying, is there another word instead of invisible? I guess she doesn't like the invisible. I think she probably is not connecting it back to the Borges thing, because I think she said she was a bit late coming in today, but is there another word that we could use? And I guess there is that connection, isn't there, between the sort of virtual communication and groups of people that are invisible to you, invisible in the sense of not tangible and that you do not see them, I guess. And yes, I think his perspective is that the fact that I cannot touch you is not relevant to the quality of our relationship. That would be his point about ditching the duality between the virtual and the physical, or the digital, you know, the sort of digital and physical.
And
so discuss.
So I'm thinking that there definitely is different qualities to these, I shouldn't try and talk and look at Twitter at the same time.
I know, but you just saw True Friends.
Yeah,
you?
I did, yeah.
That throws a whole other perspective, of course.
So we maybe we'll get to True Friends in a minute, but I was thinking that one of the things about, say, you would say about virtual friends they lack is you don't know the whole person, and you only know one aspect of them, and you only know the aspect that they present. But that seems to me is actually quite like the real world, because if you know somebody, say, at work, you will know one aspect of them, and you'll also know the aspect of them that they present. I mean, they might be unsuccessful in hiding some features. In real life, it might be harder, but we still do, I guess, try and present ourselves in a good light generally.
It's that whole, I mean, I guess that maybe a distinction is also the sort of private public, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there are degrees of that, and what we choose to share with one group of friends is not the same as what we choose to share with people at work, and so we make choices about what we do. But I guess that from the perspective of the idea of not distinguishing between virtual and physical is simply to say, I'm not going to talk for Alan and others, but I think what they're saying is the two things are so meshed together that really the choices we make when we interact virtually versus when we interact physically are not that different. And to some extent, I do see that. our true friend can hear us. Oh, well, we better talk about, can we be friends with people we haven't met?
or
living dolls.
Yeah, I think that could be a slightly touchy subject. We want to talk around that quite carefully. We're talking about, presentation of self, I guess, and the way you present yourself, and the way, say, an actress like Tina presents herself. She may give you just one aspect of her character in a certain situation.
And it's interesting because, there have been a number of posts over the last little while around this whole thing of, what is, quote, appropriate to share in a kind of, in the public setting that might be social media. Some people talking about, the sort of where is the boundary between the kind of private public and how we perform ourselves in the context of, social media. And in that sense, I guess it isn't any different. When I go to work, I don't present in the same way as I might be presenting, today or right now when we talk. When I meet somebody new, when I meet somebody who's old, when I go and see my mum, cannot now engage with any kind of complex conversations. So you make choices, don't you? And even with people who we know online, I don't know about you, probably it's just me because I'm antisocial, but I do have different degrees of knowing and interacting.
Oh, no, yeah, I think that's true for everybody, I'm sure, yeah.
and I don't always, yes, there isn't a sense of this is what I present to everybody. It's very much the kind of, the relationship between individuals and how you then navigate that. And in that sense, I suppose the idea of ditching the duality maybe is not that far-fetched, because really what we are all doing is building relationship and using different media to do that.
Yeah.
One could look at it that way.
Yeah, I think certainly, and I think to sort of go into sort of my sphere of education, say, when we're working with children, there's a lot in education that happens generally about teaching children about relationships and all the rest of it, appropriate behaviour, appropriate communication, and the digital bit is becoming more and more important, and quite a lot of places have, quite often taken the sort of lockdown approach to this, and think it's maybe really important not to do that and to actually give children the chance to discuss and for people to model and for them to play with the different sorts of interactions. And that's, I guess, what any learning space online does, and that's what we're all doing because we're not that experienced. We don't have experts in this. Well, I know we have experts in this, but we don't really have. You haven't got somebody with a, you know, a whole generation's worth of knowledge stored in their head about working online in the same way as you do about communicating offline.
I agree, and you know, and there is all this kind of conflicting, a lot of conflicting, evidence really about, you know, what's the same, what's different. You know, when we talk about community and building community online, what is, you know, what is the sort of ingredient X, and is it the same? Is building community online the same as, you know, building, you know, communities that, you know, meet physically face to face? I would say that, you know, there are big differences, and that, as you say, there are things we just do not know about how best to do it. We are doing the best we can with what is an imperfect tool, I would say.
Yeah, definitely, and that's probably the same for real life as well. It's probably these things that are merging. Although there's obviously differences, but there's differences of all sorts. You know, it could be, say, we've talked about the difference between your presentation in the workplace, or, you know, if you're in a pub, or if you're in, a knitting bee, for instance, you may not talk about other things that are there.
And it's talking, trying to lighten the mood.
Yeah. Just to kind of probably wrap, well, this wee section of the quote you've grabbed from Alan's post is, "We know differently, we live it," which I guess is the point that there isn't a difference that we're actually finding out about online relationships and stuff at the moment as we work through our lives, and an awful lot of people have moved a fair chunk of their life online.
It's also what Tim Clapdoor, I think that's how we pronounce his surname. I've only just started to read him. He seems really interesting. He did this video talking about this idea of ditching the duality, and in the video, his point, as I understand it, is that because the two realms are so enmeshed together, it is difficult to say that, one is separate from the other, that in a sense, what we are saying is, you know, actually the virtual is within what is our physical life, in the kind of way that I'm now in my living room talking with you, my computer is here, so everything is kind of meshed together. So his point is, maybe we are best thinking about it as a kind of a process that happens in our lives, and then how do we then use the different elements in order to help us build a relationship with others, which, you know, I guess I can see, but of course, you know, that it's coming from Alan, you, me, Tim, you know, we're coming from a place where I'm afraid not the majority doesn't live here. The majority that I know when I go to my university doesn't live here.
I wonder though, I mean, I think people are moving more of their lives online. A lot of young people that I talk to, you know, you start asking them what they do online and it can be quite a lot. It might just be something like Instagram, but they are making some sort of relationships, and they might not be deep and meaningful, but they're making some, and they're beginning to spread out into this.
I guess the point of it all, you know, is that take the example of, you know, I use Instagram or I go to Facebook, you know, because there are people that do that and they don't necessarily have an understanding of anything else that's going on behind them. That's where people are not able to give informed consent to anything, because actually they really do not understand a lot of the things that are going on behind the scenes. Now, as an adult, I suppose you make your choices, and even if it is that you're going to stay ignorant, well, that's your choice, right? I don't understand electricity, I use it, you know. Yeah. I do understand that I'm not supposed to put water next to it, but, you know, but I don't understand it, yeah? So we do make those choices. But I think when you talk about education and our roles as educators, that's when I think it's different, because... was it Jonathan Worth? I think in his keynote a little while ago, he was talking about how even when we think that we are telling our students, you know, what they're getting themselves into when we say use Twitter or use anything for, you know, educational purposes, that even when we think we are, actually they are not able to give informed consent because we don't really know what the hell we're doing anyway. because it's so complex, I suppose. Yeah. Let me not misquote him, because everything is so complex that even when we do our best, we don't really understand the implications of, you know, getting a group of our students to, you know, to live tweet something. What the implication of that might be X many years down the line. Do we really know that? Do we understand it enough, explain it well enough to our students that we are able to say, yes, they've given, you know, informed consent? I think that there's a, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to reflect.
So is unvirtual life any less complicated?
Physical life.
Yeah.
I think it is less complicated, you know. And here, this is where I use my favorite pub example. When you used, in the old days, I'm talking like an old person, in the old days, you and I meet at the pub and talk about Annie Cow, about David, about Rochelle, and say whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, that conversation was had. We had our beer, we left the pub, and it disappears.
Yeah.
Well, things are not like that virtually, are they?
No, I guess you're leaving trails, and that's maybe the difference. But we always did leave trails, you know, if you listen. Lots of drama sort of turns on somebody overhearing something. you know, maybe it's maybe just that we've what online does is amplify that overhearing, and we don't understand that properly.
For me, it connects back to the lack of understanding, because, I mean, I've had situations or read about situations, you know, where people really, for example, you know, they're working on in a community on Facebook or in a thing, you know, and they think that nobody else can hear them.
Mm.
And that's just simply ignorance.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You know, so you start to talk and say and do things as if you were at the pub. But, you know, but you're not at the pub.
Yeah, it's
there maybe... There's a billion people that can, you know, is it however many billions, right? I don't know anymore. That can actually read what it is that you are privately talking about, you know, about David and, you know, whatever it might be. Or about you and me, or... How they don't like the fact that we end up deviating from our subject matter most weeks.
I think we're bang on target, Mariana, for deviating. I guess, but I think that's it. I don't think there's a cut-off point. Then that's what I'm. And I think this goes from everything we've talked about tonight.
Mm.
Yeah, how do you not? How do we not know we're at the pub? it just sounds like it, David. But you know, it's just that it's a matter of degree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like if I say something in the pub about somebody else that's unpleasant, for example, that is probably a mistake. And it's probably a mistake online. It's just that you're more punished online, maybe. You know, it's amplified online.
unless the town gossip heard you say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's it.
Spread,
you know,
it around the whole village.
Yeah.
Which is a similar thing. So maybe it is. No, it's a question of quantity, and as you say, more. It's easier to spread it. It spreads quick and it stays. That's the other thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, look, they're at the pub already. Yeah. All of them. They're so funny. They're having mobile wigs, and Rochelle is having fish and chips. We better join them in the pub.
I think we've probably bashed this one around well enough.
Enough day.
For poor old Borges is probably spinning in his grave.
Probably is. He's completely misunderstanding his point altogether.
Yeah. But I think it's been quite interesting, and as usual, there's not any hard and fast conclusions. I'm beginning to think that an awful lot of the bullets you have are questions, that it's not an answer we're looking for, it's just an opening up of these questions, and it's good fun to do that.
It's like David, I think, said last week, you know, the blog post that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's deep fried chilies, indeed, David. Anyway, we'll play a wee bumper of some sort. And,
yes, find something lovely to play us out.
I played Viv Good Spelling In, and I think because I don't think this has been a very futsy one this week. So
what a shame that we didn't think, because you know that Rochelle sang this, did this song for one of the Daily Creates this week. She did a song saying goodbye to Jim.
Ah, right, yeah. There's
it was
a lot,
but it's a video, and I haven't done it on MP3, so we can't.
The whole, I actually meant to say this before we started, it'd been a nice idea to have a quick chat some weeks about stuff that's going on inside sort of the wider DS106 world, and the goodbye to Jim stuff was pretty nice. Anyway, I'm not going to play that because we haven't got it, but here's Rochelle anyway to play us out, and I guess we'll speak to everybody next week.
Bye everybody. Oh, DS106 Radio for life.
If at first you don't succeed, then skydiving isn't for you. But DS106 Radio might be. DS106 Radio, where futzing is an art form.